Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 112, entitled How to Overcome a Traumatic Experience, I chat with life coach Lisa Peterson. Lisa shares with us her best tools for overcoming a traumatic experience and getting your life back on track. She dives into the life-changing day when she survived a shooting at her doctor's office and how she was able to overcome this grief and tragedy. Lisa talks about moving on from tragedy, finding inner strength, and learning to forgive others even when they do such cruel and hurtful things to us. If you're wondering how to overcome a traumatic experience and get your life back on track today, check this episode out now. Hey man, I got a couple quick reminders I want to share with you. First, the Elite Man Podcast is available on all podcasting channels, including iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and directly on the EliteManMagazine.com website. You can subscribe to any or all of these channels to get every episode as soon as they're available, and I highly recommend you do so. Also, our show notes are always up on the EliteManMagazine.com website for you to check out more info on every podcast we have. This includes the summary of each episode, any links for products, recommendations, or resources we mention, and further info on that episode. And finally, if you're not on our Elite Man newsletter yet, join today at elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. You'll get all of our podcast episodes, articles, videos, and special content not seen or heard on the site or show. Join the newsletter now, elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Lisa Peterson from WealthClinic.com. Lisa, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Justin. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited, too. So, so funny story is we've actually had this call before, but people don't know about it because, you know, stupid me, I had the entire – We had the call a couple months back and had a great conversation, like unbelievable. Loved the podcast interview we did, and stupid me forgot to turn on the recorder, so it all got lost in the wind. But I'm so excited to bring you back on. I'm so happy you're so understanding and forgiving to give me another chance to interview you, because it was really one of my favorite episodes in a while. And I'm just excited to get you back on, Lisa.
I'm super excited to have this conversation again.
All right. So for those of you who weren't in on that initial conversation between you and I know that's nobody's, for those of the people listening now, the Elite Man audience, can you just give them kind of a quick background of what you do now? And then also I want you to dive into, I know you've told this story like a number of times on other shows and interviews and such, but I want you to dive into this, the kind of life-changing event that happened a few years back. So why don't you just take a couple minutes maybe to talk about what you do now and then how your life maybe transitioned, 4 or 5 years ago?
Perfect. So I am a money and business coach, and I focus on helping entrepreneurs break free of their money garbage in their mind and their past, you name it, so that they can go on to making lots of money and doing it in a way that's really heart-centered. So that's, in a nutshell, what I do. Mm-hmm. I have a 25-plus-year history of working in the money business. I was a financial advisor most recently. I have an MBA in finance. I'm a certified financial planner. But, you know, long story short, I wasn't as passionate about helping people preserve their money. What I was really passionate about was two things: knowing how to make, helping people make more money, but doing it in this way that's really tied to their values and to their authentic self. And that was the thing that kept pulling me in this direction of what I do today. So I also have been teaching meditation and mindfulness practices for over 15 years. And I love all of that side of the world. But for a long time, I couldn't figure out how to bring my mindfulness teachings into my financial advising practice. Like it just didn't fit, you know, that makes sense, right?
Yeah,
that's a really different world.
It's a tough connection at first.
Yeah, totally. So that was kind of a summary of how I found myself, here doing what I do. But the big thing that changed my whole entire life is back 3 years ago, I was a financial advisor at the time, and I was sitting in my doctor's office after working with this doctor for several months. He had pretty much healed me. I was deeply grateful, and this was going to be like our last appointment together. And I was sitting in the waiting room. My doctor was running a few minutes behind, and I looked up to see this man walk into the doctor's office, and he was wearing like a vest, like it looked like he was going hunting. And I thought, what is he doing? And as he kind of shouted out to the people in the waiting room, "You might want to leave now," he was pulling out a very large gun. And I just sat there frozen because I thought maybe he was a police officer. You know, I didn't understand, but I knew something was happening in the back that he was moving towards, and really sat there frozen until a receptionist tried to stop him. And she saw that he had a gun, and she started screaming at everyone to get out of the office. This person had a gun, and pretty much alerted this huge clinic that this guy was coming back into the back office. And so I tried to get out of the lobby. He proceeded to move in the other direction. And that was pretty much this moment where I knew my life was never going to be the same. And it was horrifying. I mean, we read about these things in the newspaper. We just feel so much compassion for people who live through these horrifying situations. But this man showed up. He had a vendetta against his doctor, and he went to find her. And I did not know what was going to happen. I remember saying mantras in my mind as I tried to get out of the doctor's office, you know, please don't hurt anyone. Please, you know, this is going to be okay. Like, this is going to be okay. But when I got to the lobby, I was on the third floor of a building, and people by that point were running in all directions, screaming, trying to figure out how to get out of the building. And people were trying to find the stairs. Some people were going into the restrooms. And I thought, no, that doesn't, I know how that goes. You know, I've heard these stories. You don't want to stay in the building. And as I waited there in the elevator kind of bank, one of the elevator doors opened up, and I thought, well, I don't know where the stairs are. I'm going to go there. And so did a few other people. And as we got into the elevator, we pushed the floor, you know, one button, and started to just kind of like, wow, this is horrifying. And as soon as the doors would start to shut, a hand would come in and stop the doors. And this kept happening because people were running away. These nurses in the back office were running away from him, and they were coming around the corner and then jumping into the elevator. And it just kept happening over and over and over again. And at some point along the way, I kind of had this, what I look back and think is like an out of body experience, where I thought the next person through those doors, there's so many people coming, is going to be him. And I thought, you know, I might not be going home. And sort of my whole life flashed before me. And in that moment, I knew that if I lived, that I was going to be making some big changes in my life. And so eventually the door shut. We went down to the lobby. I ended up packing my car full of all these nurses who had no car keys, had no jackets. It was like 30 degrees out in Reno, Nevada in December. And we kind of got into the car and tried to drive out so that we could get some space between us and what was going on. What ended up happening was this man did find his doctor. He shot her, and then my doctor got involved, and he shot at my doctor, hit a family member of a patient who had just gone back, and then shot and killed my doctor. And then eventually, we're not sure what happened, but he eventually shot and killed himself. And so that was this huge turning point in my life. I just feel for all the people who had to go through it. And obviously for my doctor and his family, it was just horrifying. And that was really the shift, you know, that I could talk more about. But did you have any questions about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is just an incredible story. And I thank you again, Lisa, for sharing it, because I know, you know, how tough it can be to, you know, talk about it again. And especially since you did it again, you know, the other time before we had the conversation. But no, it just, it's an incredible story. And I love kind of the after events that you took, the changes or whatever that you kind of embarked on making in your life. And I think it's incredible. So the shooter, just to kind of recap, the shooter had some kind of problem with his doctor, went in there to shoot his doctor. And then I think your doctor, who was a very, you know, loving kind of guy and, you know, always standing up for people and was a great doctor. You had a great relationship with him, stepped in to kind of fight him off or stop him. And then he ended up getting killed. Is that right?
Yeah, that's how I put the pieces together of what I heard later at the police station.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just such a tragedy. And you said this happened in Reno, Nevada, right? This made national news and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, when we stayed close by and then the police were trying to gather people who had been witnesses to everything. And we didn't know at this point who had been shot. We didn't know that he had killed himself, but we were asked to go to the police station. And as they were trying to find the people who were still around, who hadn't just left completely, I was standing in the middle of a street and a woman who was guiding us around was from the SWAT team. And she had this huge machine gun on, and the national press picked up this photo of me standing next to her in this street. And that went kind of viral. That was the picture that sort of got shared of what was happening. And that ended up causing people that I know to see me on this picture thinking, what is going on? Like, that's Lisa, you know, and that even started a whole other chain of events. But it was just obviously just, I was in total shock. I, you know, remember bits and pieces of the day, but I just couldn't believe that had happened. And, you know, that this was something that was just horrifying.
Yeah. We always hear about these, you know, shootings or just like crazy things that happen in on TV and in other people's lives, you know, whether it's national, whether it's, you know, in another country, overseas, in the Middle East or something. But like when it happens to you, it's like, oh my God, what is going on? It's just a complete shock. What was your mindset, if like anything at all? Or is it just kind of like in survival mode when something like this happens?
It was totally about survival mode. And also, what's so strange is that I'm deeply spiritual. I've been on this spiritual journey for like over 17 years now. I had reached a place in my own journey where I felt like there were no coincidences. The things that we come in contact with come and were there for a reason. And in this case, all I could think about, well, what's the meaning? Like, why was I here at 2:00 on that day? I'd only been there a couple times before. Most of the time I would see my doctor at the hospital. Like, why was I there? And it really brought things full circle for me, because in all fairness and in all honesty, I had been really unhappy in my career. I mentioned before that I was interested in helping people in one way, but I was very successful. I'm a very good financial planner. I'm a very good financial advisor, but it wasn't my passion. And when you come that close to thinking that you might die, it has a way of putting things in perspective. This is the same thing that happens to people when they're told that they have, you know, stage 4 ovarian cancer, or you know, it's a wake-up call that just changes everything. And I think that what I saw was, first of all, it was my time to make some big changes. I had already been making a lot of changes in my life, but this was still the one area where I had reached a certain level of awakening in my own life. I was teaching those things to other people, but I had a sense that I was supposed to figure out how to do the same work, but do it at a level around money. Like, why do people suffer so much with money? That was my journey. That was my question that I was consumed by, but I was not doing anything with it, not really, in my job as a financial advisor. walking away from something that we're financially successful with, you know, especially when you have issues around scarcity, which is what I now look back and see, you know, I just couldn't get up the nerve to do it. I support my family. I just couldn't leave. And after that, it was like, no, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, you can't keep this inside of you. And even if you don't know what you're going to do, you need to go start pursuing it. And that's exactly what I did. It took me a few months, but I walked away from all my clients and I started this company with the goal of figuring out how can I help people break free of suffering as it pertains to money. I knew it wasn't just about how much money you had. I knew something else was going on and I wanted to figure it out. And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it. So I remember something of you mentioning you did like a retreat in your closet. Can you just kind of talk about that?
Yeah. So unfortunately my story, you know, this tragedy that happened in 2013 wasn't the first one. In 1999, my dad was brutally murdered by his ex-girlfriend and her boyfriend. And it had been premeditated and it was like ultimate vengeance. And it was so horrifying to get the details of it that my life sort of collapsed on the inside and began this journey of looking inside and going to meditation and studying Buddhism and trying to find how I could be happy in a world full of suffering. Well, I think it was about 6 or 7 years later, my mom had stage 4 ovarian cancer. She was very, very sick and I was helping her through the process. And I knew that I needed to do this retreat. And the only way that I could do this retreat was to, I had a 1-year-old baby at the time, an 8-year-old daughter. And I decided that I was going to go into my closet, which was a good size closet, but it wasn't too, it was pretty nice size. I was going to go into the closet, shut the door, and pretty much do this counting retreat, this mantra counting retreat that would take me a few months to complete. And I would come out to eat and do a few other things, but I was going to pretty much live in that closet for that time frame. And so that's exactly what I did. I completed the retreat. It was very meaningful. It sounds weird that my mom was so sick, but I was doing this retreat. But when I came out of it, I was in such a better position to help my mom through this horrifying situation that she found herself in. And I was so much more of service to everyone around me as a result of clearing out. Really what happened in that closet was that it was like clearing out, you know, you see those movies where you kind of have these ghosts that are moving out in and out of people's heads, or just things are getting like sucked like a vacuum out of someone's head. I feel like that's what happened to me for 3 months, felt like 3 years, where I was just clearing things out of my mind to be able to be not caught caught up in my own story, but to actually be of service to others. And before that retreat, I just was always in my own worst enemy. I had a lot of head garbage. I just was really negative inside. No matter how hard I tried to break free of it, I'd still return to that. And when I came out of the retreat, I was like so present to everything that was going on around me. And I feel like it, you know, it led up to the work that I do now.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. So what were the, you know, obviously I don't know why I forgot about the 1999 tragedy with your father again too, because that obviously had a huge impact, and we'll actually dive into that in a moment, which kind of I think braced you for something for you to get over anything that kind of came your way afterwards. When you kind of get over that and you know, it kind of shapes you. As I talked with JJ Virgin, you know, a little while back about how her tragedy, not tragedies, but her challenges and obstacles that she'd overcome earlier in her life had actually helped her overcome her kid being hit by a car and nearly getting killed. And he was in a coma for a few months. So it kind of, it makes you stronger. I tell people this all the time, the challenges, the obstacles you face, all the adversity you face in your life just builds up inside you, I think, and makes you a stronger person. And I think that's applicable to this case as well. But we'll get into that in a moment. What were kind of a few of the things you were doing, like, in the closet when you were meditating? Like, what kind of how much time were you spending, like, in the closet at a time? I know it kind of seems like a weird question, but how much time, like, periodically were you in the closet? And what kind of things were you, like, really thinking about? Or was it all just kind of like a meditation thing?
So with Buddhist practices, there's mantras, right? You've seen them with the prayer wheels probably, or the mala beads, the 108 malas. So you're counting the mantras and using the malas to count how many you've done. So you know you're at the end of 100. The reason, I don't know if you know this, but the reason there's 108 is 108 is a spiritual number, but also we are not very mindful when we're counting mantras, not 100 or 108. And so the 8 is like extra to count for the ones that you didn't actually do very well. So you weren't very mindful when you were saying them. You were mindless. So it's kind of, the idea was I was going to repeat a mantra. I think it works out to 130,000 times, and it's a long mantra. So that, what happens when you're counting mantras at that level is you start to reach some pretty interesting states of consciousness. You know, obviously words don't really describe, but I'll do my best. One is you start to clear when you, so these mantras are very, very powerful. Like they have beautiful, energy associated with them. And so when we start to repeat them, our consciousness starts to take a whole new level, not after 1,000, not after even 10,000, but when you're into 50, 75,000 of these mantras, you're a little bit delirious. Your brain is no longer operating in the way that you're used to it operating. Instead, what's happening is your natural state of consciousness, which is pure, beautiful, open, free light and peace, starts to take over. And anything that's not love, peace, light starts to evacuate. There's no space for it. And so you actually get rid of and eliminate things. So what would happen is sometimes I'd be overcome by emotion, and it would be directly tied into forgiveness, for example. A lot of the stuff we're holding on to is grudges, even though everyone says, I don't have any grudges. Well, they do. And it can be grudges towards our brothers and sisters. It can be grudges towards our parents. It can be grudges towards ourselves. And as we do this, those things start to appear and we realize that they're nothing. They're just a thought. They're not something we have to hold on to anymore. And they're released, you know, and sometimes it's very emotional. Sometimes I'd be in that closet crying for hours, but I was in there on average about 12 hours a day, and maybe longer sometimes, because I knew I had a schedule to keep as far as how many mantras I needed to get through each day to arrive at my destination, which was completion of the retreat.
Have you joined the best Facebook group on the planet yet? If not, what the hell is wrong with you? Just kidding. If not, join right now. You are missing out. We have hundreds of awesome, awesome guys in this group every single day sharing their best tips, strategies, advice, and techniques for becoming the best man they can be and you can be. If you're looking to improve, say, your dating, your health, your fitness, your business, your confidence, your social skills, your style, any one of these key areas that goes into being a man, this is the Facebook group for you. Everyone in the group is so connected, and we share our best advice and just helpful strategies throughout the week in becoming the best men we can be. Go to EliteManMastermind.com and it will forward you right to our Facebook group. Or you could just go right on Facebook and just search Elite Man Mastermind in the search bar. Either way works, EliteManMastermind.com, or search Elite Man Mastermind right on Facebook. But you have to join this group. It is unbelievable the amount of quality men in this group, and it's unbelievable how we're all helping each other out and helping each other become the best men we can be every single day. It's the best way to be connected with other like-minded guys and the best way to be part of this elite man community that's growing and growing. And man, I look forward to connecting with you and furthering our conversation and getting to know you on a much better level. So join me in the group. It's EliteManMastermind.com, or just type it right in the search bar, Elite Man Mastermind, when you go on Facebook. I know you're all on Facebook. Everyone's on Facebook. I'm on Facebook every single day, and I love this group, and it is such an awesome community of guys. So I look forward to seeing you there, EliteManMastermind.com.
Is there any like resources you can mention for anyone who's kind of interested in learning more about mantras?
I mean, Google it, right? There's
Okay.
so many different teachings about mantras. What I think can be really fun is, you start with the simple one, which is Om Mani Padme Hum. And you can find that it's the universal mantra. It's a love-based mantra, very heart-centered, heart chakra-centered meditation. So you just repeat Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Over and over again. If you have mala beads, you can do it with your beads, but see how you feel. I guarantee you do that 100 times and you're going to feel refreshed. You're going to feel peaceful. It's very powerful practice. Does that?
Yeah, that's really cool. We haven't talked about that on the show before, so I think it's really interesting, and I'd love to learn some more about that as well, and I know our guys will probably check that out. You said 2 months of doing this, 2 months of kind of living in the closet, I guess, so to speak, but really getting a hold of your emotions, of getting a lot of this, stuff out, these issues, these problems. What did you kind of do after that? I know we kind of in the first conversation we had, we dove into you being able to forgive the shooter and how that came about. And that's kind of what I want to focus on. For the last, kind of second half of this call is really, how did you get past the fact that this guy gave you or what could have potentially been such like a traumatic experience? Because, I mean, you were able to get over it, but this is just like something that so many people would hate the shooter for the rest of their life. And then also, of course, the boyfriend and the, I think, ex-girlfriend, ex-wife who ended up murdering your father years back. How do you let something like that go?
Yeah, I love forgiveness practice. I think first we should just say that this isn't about condoning things that have happened. It has nothing to do with, that it was okay that it happened. And people get confused. They feel like they have to. Forgiveness means letting the past be the past. And instead, I invite people to think that, first of all, the reason we practice forgiveness and the reason I did it was I realized that I had drank the poison and was hoping that other people would suffer as a result. Like, that's what happens when we have grudges against other people. We hope that something bad will happen to them. But in reality, that feeling of hostility and, hatred, right, towards someone else is actually eating us alive. And so I knew that. Once I started doing it with the situation that happened in 99 with the people who had hurt my father, then I knew that it was very powerful. I'd also practiced it again with all of my family members, anyone and everyone, friends, everyone. It has done something. Like, if you think of a person, we can all think of any person in our life, and we can think of one thing that we wish they hadn't done. Now, it may be minor or it may be really severe, but that's what we have to do. We have to be willing to look at the situation with real, open, honest awareness. Then we can begin to see how we're the ones suffering more than anything. Like, this is an act of self-compassion, really, that we're ready to see what could be on the other side of these negative feelings that we're feeling. Like, we just get so sick and tired of those feelings that we're ready to let them go. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are some of the active practices you use to master this like art of forgiveness?
Mm-hmm. So once we are aware of what's going on, what I often do is I will bring the person into my conscious awareness where I look at them and I realize first and foremost that even though they may have been doing things that never would have been what I would have done, I am going to say that they were actually doing what made sense to them. And that's a real hard thing for a lot of people to get over because we refuse to look at the world from other people's eyes. We only want to judge others and think, like, I did this with my brother for a long time. My brother is 3 years younger. He was like the black sheep, and he would always be getting in trouble. And I'm like, why can't you be like me? Like, I don't get in trouble. Why can't you just be like me? And I judged him that way. Well, this is what we're doing with everyone. We look at other people and we think, well, I would have never made that stupid mistake. I would have never hurt people. So therefore, you're bad and I'm good. But that's, we're never going to solve the problem with forgiveness. We're never going to get anywhere if we look at it that way. When we turn and we look at the other person as if we had their exact life, if we went through whatever they've gone through, and again, even we come in with things into this life, so we don't ultimately know, but we try our damnedest to get in the other person's shoes, looking at the world from their perspective. The minute we do that, we can actually do the same thing for ourselves, because at any given time, we are always doing the best that we can. And that shifts everything, because then we can start to feel that they are not the enemy, and that changes everything.
Okay, so what do you do, I guess, about, I mean, are you able to kind of apply this across the board to anything that happens, or is there maybe, like, I'm thinking, is there people in your life who you haven't been able to forgive, or maybe other people listening who it's like, yeah, I just can't forgive, or maybe you can forgive that person, but you can't kind of, I guess, like, maybe something in an instance like a wife cheating on a husband, or the vice versa, or, you know, something like that where it's
nothing so, is immune.
Okay, so if something like that happens and you totally forgive somebody, can you let them back into your life fully, or is it something like you can't, like, trust them again if they kind of, you know, lie to you or cheat on you or something like that?
Right. Well, there's another part I'll just mention, that oftentimes the reason forgiveness is so hard to do is we actually feel like we did something wrong. Okay. So we actually feel some level of guilt inside of us that if I had done this differently, then it wouldn't have turned out that way. Now, we don't pay that much attention to it, but when we're trying to forgive, if there's a strong feeling of guilt in there, it's really hard to do this work. So that's another area that we always have to look at. So let's say in the cheating situation, first of all, the point of forgiveness isn't to necessarily, just like to take somebody back in or to have them even be in your life. The point is to be able to not leave them outside of your heart. So you can have somebody still be in your heart, but say, you know what? I don't want to get back together. You know, you know, for whatever reason, it could be you don't feel like it's a good situation. When you've forgiven them, you see that even though that's their best way of showing up, your best way of showing up is not to have that happen, right? So you just don't want to do it again. But the point is that when we're in this place of neutrality, we are in a much better position to actually make decisions about what to do next than when we're in a place of guilt and grudge and hatred.
Okay. I love that answer. And it makes a lot of sense now to me. It's like, you know, you're not forgiving someone like, oh, everything's great. You know, you cheated on me or lied to me or stole from me, whatever it was. You know, just pretend it never happened. It's more like, I'm okay with it myself. I'm over it myself. I'm in a place of neutrality, which I love that word, and kind of like just okay with everything. And you know, whether you want to go forward with that person, give them another shot, or whether you just kind of want to move on with your life, it's really up to you, right?
Yeah, and even the word okay, I'm going to play with that, because I'm sure people are like, well, you know, I don't ever want to be okay with that person. And again, this isn't like, there isn't a right way or a wrong way. The point is so you aren't suffering anymore. This may or may not have anything ever to do with that person again. Like, you may decide that I have to cut them out because I love myself too much to go through that again. For example, like, this is ultimately about self-love and self-compassion. And when you can get to that place, when you were saying the word okay, I just want to make sure everybody hears this, is you're okay about you first and foremost. Like, you are okay, and you're going to be okay going forward. And now, you know, how you decide to interact with that person, it's going to come from a place of love, but first and foremost, self-love and self-preservation, which, you know, you got to put the oxygen mask on you first before you can help the child, you know, in the plane that's going down. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing here. Like, if you can put the mask on yourself, everything else is going to start to shift and be different as a result because of where you're coming at it from.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe the statement that love heals?
I do. I think it's very simple. It might be a little too simple.
Okay.
But yes, love is incredibly powerful to heal all. The problem is that most of us have very skewed ideas of what love really is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there you go.
And what are these skewed ideas? I got to follow up.
Well, we think, love is, we've been given different ideas from our culture, from our parents about what love is. Some people think that love is somewhat similar to being a doormat to others. Mm-hmm. Like I do whatever they want. I keep them happy. My husband, who I've been together with for coming up on 30 years, he'll do this thing that just drives me nuts. And he'll say, yes, dear, whatever you want, dear. And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm teaching people. See, you can't do that. But do you know what I mean? Right.
Yeah.
Some people think that that's true love, that you do whatever people want and you're second and they're first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that ties right into the dating strategy we talk about on the show from time to time. Dating advice is like doing everything. Like a guy will do everything a woman wants, like to try to woo her or try to, go on a date with her or try to be more attractive. They're like, oh, I did everything. I did this. I did that. I bought her that. And it's like, it doesn't work that way. You can't just like buy love, or you can't just like give everything, do everything that she wants and, jump up when she says jump and bend over backward for her. It doesn't work that way. It's a mutual thing going on. Like it's a lot more complex than you just, pretending to, because that's what it is too. It's pretending to love someone. It's not, I think, it's not real love, and it's not coming from a place of earnest or honesty. It's just kind of like you're trying to fake it or trying to like buy it from somebody.
Totally. Yeah, so that's why when we say love heals, it's like, well, maybe not. Because that way of being is not going to heal. It's always going to be a problem. You're setting yourself up for pain and suffering in that relationship, ultimately.
So what do you think love really means to you? Like, where is it something that's just like an internal thing? Is it loving yourself first, and then that kind of just, that energy resonates with other people?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. I also think that there's, we're not solo beings. We're, obviously very oriented to belonging and connection. And so just like I think of money is meant to be given and received in a holistic way. I think love is meant to be given and received in a holistic way and in balance, so that we're not giving too much and we're not taking too much. It's this beautiful blend and harmony of what it means to be fully present with, another human being and not have one person dominating or more taking and the other person more giving. So that's what I think about when I think about the love word.
Well, I love that definition. Love is a balance. I think that's kind of a great way to sort of wrap things up. Lisa, is there a place that you want our listeners to check out more about you? I know you have wealthclinic.com. Is there any other place specifically you'd like to send our guys?
I think that, if they've been interested in this conversation, another great place would be the Art of Abundance podcast, which Justin's interview is awesome. So mm-hmm. It's posted. I wish I knew the number, but that would be a great option to check out the podcast and get a feel for some of the work that I'm doing. I do interviews like you, but I also give classes through the podcast. So
cool. Love it. Yeah. Wealthclinic.com, guys, the Art of Abundance podcast that was on there as well. Phenomenal podcast in iTunes. Lisa, thanks again for doing this call. I really appreciate you giving me another shot and coming back on. I know our guys are going to absolutely love this interview. So take care and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.